The topics discussed here tonight are general in nature, and you should seek personal advice before acting on any of this information. And now, on 2GB 873, The Bottom Line. Thanks to IT Financial Services, high-quality financial planning. Visit itfs.com.au.
And once again, we welcome a couple of wonderful people in from IT Financial Services. And we've got Carly Tonkinson and Philip Tape. Good day.
Good morning.
Good day, Mike.
How are you going?
Very well.
You both look sparkly, bright as a button. Have you just gotten out of bed or something?
Yeah.
Just out of the shower.
You look brilliant. Sensational. We had some fun last week, actually, with the lads that were in. And we talked about a whole host of things. And by the way, folks, this is your chance to call to action, if you will, to give us a call on 131 873. 131 873. If not, you can send us off an email. That's mwilliams@2gb.com. Okay, mwilliams@2gb.com. If you have any questions of these a couple of wonderful, very informed persons about finance, superannuation, or whatever it may be. Listen, should we be more worried about Brexit than domestic politics at the moment? What's the story there, guys?
I think it's a tough one because at the moment, you know, we know there are these big things on the horizon and yet no one really knows what the outcome's going to be. Well, not exactly. We've been speculating so much over the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
For me, look, Brexit, longer term, has the potential to have a much bigger impact because it flows through globally. You know, what happens, you know, with Brexit could impact Europe. Europe is then China's biggest trading partner. That then flows onto us, you know, and has impacts right around the world.
Mm.
Whereas domestically, I guess that's the thing that most of us will be focusing on because those, you know, the changes announced in the budget, which, you know, may or may not go through depending on the final outcome of the makeup of the parliament, you know, they're individual legislative changes that will impact upon all of us and I guess the plans that we set in place with our own funds and our own finances.
Sure. I mean, initially we were worried about the markets, we were worried about the Australian dollar, we were worried about small business, we were worried about what's happening with when things settle down over there with imports, exports, the markets, all that stuff. It doesn't seem to have gotten too bad a start, though.
I think what we saw was the market really panic when the Brexit came through, and that was... A lot of that was just on the back of that it was unexpected. So that's not what people were expecting and people went into a panic.
Yeah.
But realistically, I mean, the UK for Australia is not a huge part of our trade anyway. But as Phil said, it will flow on globally. So, you know, it will eventually trickle down to us. Domestically, we've discussed before, there's no evidence that either government, the Labor or the Coalition have an impact either way on investment markets.
Mm.
So despite what people may think, there's nothing to say one government over the other will be better for markets.
Mm.
But at the moment, and what we've seen come out over the past week is the ratings agencies having a bit of concern about the Australian budget. So domestic politics in that sense will actually have a bit of an impact for investors because if our rating is reduced, it could do things such as put up your mortgage rates, for example. So,
yeah.
That will certainly be a concern.
There was a lot of people asking on my program the other night, and we sort of looked it up, and I think the answer might have been from ATSIC or whatever. But the question, it was an interesting question, who are these people answerable to, Standard and Poor's and people like that? Is it the government? Is it the government feeding them information? Where do they get their information, and who are they answerable to? Are they, you know, who looks after them? Who oversees them, if you will? Who checks the checkers, if you will?
Well, that was your big problem during the global financial crisis,
uh-huh.
that, you know, they were only answerable to the big companies and organisations who were paying their fees and their, you know, generating their income.
Yeah.
So I don't think anything has really changed that much since the GFC.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're meant to be independent in the way they do their research.
Yeah.
Well, not truly. Obviously, if you're making your money from, you know, big banks and major organisations paying for your research, then you're going to have some kind of bias towards giving them a favourable rating.
But if they're saying something about the country's, you know, credit rating as such, AAA, obviously, you know, they have to be independent and they have to know or have great bona fides, basically, don't they?
Well, I think you're also assuming that they have some kind of foresight or knowledge that the rest of us don't have. And the reality is nobody really knows the future, and they sure. can't predict it any better than anyone else.
But that could also put the boot into Australia and lower the AAA to yeah. what does it go down to from AAA? What
I think
is it?
They were talking AA-.
AA-. Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. So that's a hell of a responsibility to do to a country, isn't
but
it?
But they are. I mean, and there's different agencies as well, and yeah. they are, as Philip says, they're just businesses, and they're being paid for their research. I guess, look, it's in their best interest that their research be right, because yeah. if they're getting the calls wrong, nobody's going to be paying them for that research.
Sure.
But it's certainly not, it is more these big banks, big business that I guess are the influencer, not the governments themselves.
And who pays them?
The companies after the research. So banks may, large banks may pay them for that research so that they know what the risk is in dealing with certain countries.
Yeah, sure. It's like the Credit Reference Association for people in general, but the Credit Reference Association for the country, basically. Mm. Is that sort of a good sort of
Credit
summation?
Absolutely. On steroids, yeah.
I love it. But go on.
I was going to say, I think it's a misnomer, though, to think that just, the moment that they change the rating, that everybody instantly panics.
Yes.
Companies aren't that reactive. They're looking ahead into the future. They'd be talking to the ratings agency about, yes. are you likely to make a change? How are things looking? And they're getting prepared and setting up their trades and their investments well in advance of the change actually happening. So if our rating was downgraded, I wouldn't expect that would cause some kind of instantaneous, catastrophe on share markets, because it's pretty well flagged, pretty well predicted, to be honest.
I guess for us as well, it's more the property market that you would look at. I mean, Australia has so much household debt, and certainly if our rating was to drop, the cost for banks of borrowing money overseas to lend to all our homeowners will increase, and that increase will be passed on. So I guess the property market there would be at the forefront, as opposed to other investments.
Yeah, sure. Well, the government's got a big job ahead of it, and I know that because of the debt we're in, and we were looking up the net debt at the moment is over $1 trillion, and it's not great. Where's the Australian dollar at the moment? It was 75.1 or something.
That,
still hanging around that as well. Interesting stuff. Listen, folks, this is for you, by the way. 131-873, if you'd like to give us a call. If you have a question about investment, superannuation, if you've got a bit of money sitting in the bank and you're not sure what to do with it, perhaps you might like to give us a call and have a chat to these lovely folks who are sitting here just waiting for your calls from IT Financial Services. Get to know your superannuation. I had on my list here. I mean, most of us will be receiving our annual super statements in the coming weeks. What can you expect, and amongst the pages of information, what should we be looking for, in fact? What's out there for us?
I think, look, most people will at best look at the balance. Some people might even go as far as to look at the return that they've received for the year, but a lot don't. They just look at the balance and put it away.
Yeah.
But realistically, there's things even more important than looking even just at the last year's return. People really should be looking, firstly, what are the investments that you've got in the fund? And that, will usually look like a pretty little pie graph or something on the statement, but actually have a look at it and see what it means. Most people we see are not even invested appropriately for what they're investing for, so either for their age or for what they're looking to do with their fund. So look at the asset allocation. If you're 20 years old and you're sitting there all in cash, then maybe it's time to have a look at it and see what else you could invest in, because it's going to be there for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
If you're approaching retirement and it's all in shares, then again, maybe it's time to look and see, a little bit of diversification might be in order. So look at what your investments are in, and I think that's more important than just looking at what the return is.
Yeah, sorry, were you going to jump in?
Well, I was going to add in that often the biggest line item, because people worry about fees so much, but often the biggest expense associated with people's super funds is the insurance policy that you have attached, whether it's life insurance or some kind of disability insurance. Mm. So generally that is quoted on the statement as well. So you should be able to check how much are you covered for, what is it costing. And often what you find when we tick over a financial year is that the level of cover may change, because it may be indexed each year. So you may end up having more cover than you originally wanted to begin with, and you're then paying more for it. So you want to review that. Has it been increased to a level that's now beyond your needs? Or conversely, what a lot of industry super funds do is they maintain the cost quite stable. You pay however many hundreds of dollars a year, but as you get older, the amount of cover reduces. So it looks like the cost isn't really changing, but you're getting a lot less for the money that you're spending. Yeah. So exactly the same, I guess, scenario. You need to have a look at it and say, well, is this now worthwhile? Or the flip side, is it enough? You know, maybe I need more. Maybe I've just taken out a new mortgage. Maybe I've just had a child, and my commitments have increased and I need to protect my family. So I actually need to review this and maybe increase the
cover. So you're suggesting people don't really review that as often as they should. This is sounding like a parallel to health insurance.
Yeah.
Because people don't check that or see how that's going to be benefiting or if they are benefiting by that. So there is a parallel there, isn't there, basically, with the super.
Except with the super fund, when you sign up, you get this cover automatically.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you even really think about it. It's just a default level of cover that somebody using some formula has decided that's probably roughly what you need.
Yeah, sure.
At least with health insurance, you go out and get a quote yourself and make up your mind whether you're going to take it out or not. Whereas with super, most people just go with the flow. So generally, they're spending money on cover that's not exactly appropriate for their needs.
Yeah.
And so how do you work it out? Well, it's not easy, to be honest. You really have to think about a lot of those less pleasant things in life. You know, what happens if something happens to me? What happens if something happens to my partner?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to survive financially? How are we placed? And a lot of people don't want to have those discussions, which is why we all ignore it.
Sure.
But you know what? For 5 or 10 minutes of deep thought, it's well worth it because, it sets your family up for the worst case scenario.
Yeah, no, exactly. And we should be looking out for, I mean, in the old days, from a layman's point of view, different super funds charge different amounts of money. There's maintenance and charges that they take out. Is that a consideration too when you're setting yourself up with a super fund?
Absolutely. My argument would be, like most things in life, you get what you pay for.
Yes.
So fees are somewhat of a necessary evil. And it very much depends on how you want to manage your super, what your balance is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the more you've got in there, the far greater options that you have available to you that will be cost effective.
Yeah.
It's definitely an area where it's worth getting some advice, though. Mm-hmm. Talking to someone and saying, well, what are my options? Not necessarily just being told, you know, go with option A. People really need to go and see someone and say, show me option A, B, and C, line them up side by side, tell me what the pros and cons are, and then make some kind of informed decision about which one's going to suit them best. Because the last thing you want to get into is chopping and changing between funds all the time, because there are costs involved with that. We've just mentioned insurances.
Yeah.
You know, each time you move, you cancel your insurance, you've got to reinstate it.
Yeah.
As you get older, that can be difficult because of health issues and things like that. So there's huge advantages to choosing a fund that suits you and sticking with it long term.
I think the other thing, though, to keep in mind is that a fund that suits you initially will not always suit you. And
down the line, you mean, sort of.
Definitely. And as you accumulate more money, as Philip said, your options really open up. And a lot of people think, I'm in a low-cost fund, and for whatever reason, some funds are, people just think it's low-cost, whether or not they know that actually how much it costs. And often later, as you accumulate more money, these so-called low-cost funds aren't low-cost anymore, just because of the way that the fees work. And so what you think may be a cheaper option can often be the more expensive option. And I think also where people actually pay attention to what the costs are and pay attention to what the insurance are, naturally you're going to do better with your money if you're paying attention to it and you're reviewing it and you're doing the right things. Because if you're just ignoring it, chances are you're in the wrong investment option, you've probably got the wrong amount of insurance, you will at some point be in a fund that may no longer be appropriate. And if you just never look at it, doing nothing is not the answer with superannuation.
No, exactly. Listen, we're going to take a break. 131, we've got some lines available right now. 131, so you're pretty sweet with all your money out there, are you? You know what you're doing with it? This is your opportunity. This is a call to action. 131873, and we would love to take your calls. Anything in the way of superannuation, investments, if you've got some money up your sleeve, if you're not, maybe you're not happy with where you've got your money at the moment, give us a call. Carly and Philip here to take your calls from IT Financial Services, of course. Anything else that you might have just a left field question. Give us a call, 131873. If not, send that mwilliams@2gb.com is the email address. We'll take a break. We'll be back with you. Welcome back, everyone. Of course, we're here with IT Financial Services, Carly Tonkinson and Philip Tafe. here to answer your questions. Look, our producer, just very quickly, and we'll get to your call in 1 second, Paul, by the way, has given us this superannuation tax changes, and ministers warned Malcolm Turnbull, and I think this was out of the what paper was this?
The Australian.
Australian, was it? Oh, the Australian. Deputy Liberal Leader Julie Bishop warned fellow members of the federal government senior leadership, including Malcolm Turnbull and ScoMo, about an angry voter backlash against their superannuation tax changes, but was overruled as the coalition stuck with the controversial reforms. Now, the Australian understands Ms. Bishop was joined by other senior ministers, including Christopher Payne, Peter Dutton and Barnaby Joyce, in expressing concern about the fierce response to the Treasurer's policy during the election campaign. The ministers warned, of course, Mr. Morrison, that his budget plan to impose that $1.6 million transfer cap on tax-free super and $500,000 lifetime cap on concessional contributions was seen as a broken promise from previous elections. What does this say to people, from your point of view, if someone walked in the office and said, listen, what do I do about all this stuff with the government? What do you say to these, and what do you think about this policy, about this story?
Yeah, look, this story, I mean, it was in the Fin Review, I think, on the weekend as well. There's speculation that they may wind back some of these changes, but yes. Brandis has come out last night on Q&A and said strongly they will put them to the Senate as proposed. So whether or not they get through as proposed is debatable anyway. But look, they are unpopular. I think the biggest thing is that there was a bit of an unwritten rule with superannuation that any changes they make like this, they grandfather. So if you're already in the system, you've already done what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
They won't look back and change things.
Okay.
The $1.6 million transfer cap is retrospective. It is, because they're going to go back and you started your pension years ago. Well, you'll still be coming in under this new rule.
Right.
However, you know, broadly speaking, I don't have a big problem with that. And they are right about that one, in that it doesn't affect a huge amount of people. And the fact is, you can still have quite a lot of money in that very tax-free, you know, good investment environment.
Yeah.
The $500,000 lifetime cap on what you can contribute to your super, that's something that I've got a lot more difficulty with. And
sure.
Again, it is retrospective, because they're looking at what you've done in the past and counting that towards that lifetime cap. And by bringing it in the way they did, so this applies from today, which is what they said on budget night, you know, if you're in the middle of selling a property to contribute to superannuation, or you know, to set you up for retirement, there's a whole raft of strategies that could have just been completely obliterated, really, by doing that. And it has thrown that uncertainty into the superannuation system.
Yeah.
And that's why this unwritten rule of grandfathering is to keep people's confidence in the system. And to, you know, if you act today with the current rules, you know, you're going to be okay.
Mm.
And people are questioning that now.
That's what I take from it, is that it's this issue of confidence.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the statistics are that this $1.6 million, you know, lifetime or limit on tax-free money, it affects, you know, 4% of Australians or something like that. So 96% of us may not be impacted by it, but we actually care, because we see it as, I guess, the tip of the iceberg in them changing the rules and just, you know, moving the goalposts all the time, and we don't like that.
Indeed.
So just tell us what the rules are so that we can operate within them. And the other point I take from it is, you know, they're talking about this $1.6 million cap, but it's actually going to be very, very difficult to get $1.6 million in super over your lifetime, because under these proposed changes, you can only put in $25,000 a year pre-tax, and you're going to lose somewhere between 15 and 30% tax on that contribution.
Sure, yeah.
Plus that $500,000 lump sum. It, you know, it's actually very difficult to get
to reach that limit.
Million.
Yeah. How many times can you be taxed? I mean, tax on tax on tax on tax. I mean, that's always been a big criticism of a lot of the stuff that governments, present and past, have put together, in fact. Is there confusion? The other thing that, just talking to some elderly sort of friends of mine, there's a lot of confusion out there. Are you finding that with people coming, knocking on IT financial services doors?
100%.
In terms of the changing, the moving the goalposts, the changes of this and that, caps, you know, concessions, all that. But it is, isn't it?
But people shouldn't confuse it with super being bad, because it's not. You know, the reason why they're moving the goalposts is because it's so damn tax effective. Mm. They don't want you to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So get your money in while you can, because what they're doing is continually restricting your ability to get money in.
Sure.
So I wouldn't view it as that means I'll ignore super. It really means you've got to take advantage of it with every cent that they'll allow you to.
Yeah.
And then if you've got money left over after that, well, great, you go and invest it elsewhere.
Yeah, all right. We've got Paul on the phone. G'day, Paul, how are you going?
Well, thank you.
Say g'day to the guys.
How are you, Carly?
Good morning, Paul.
And
Philip.
Philip, yeah, how are you, Philip?
Well.
Just two things. When the government says that it's only 4% affected by the changes, so that is the wealthiest, I certainly don't agree with them. That I retired last year at 61, and my final salary was $72,000 per annum, and that was with a 2.5% increase only 3 days before I retired. So I picked that up in the super. So I certainly don't feel I'm in that that wealthy 4%, but I am affected by the changes. Through my life, I've tried to provide for myself and save a bit extra. And I put in a bit over six months before retirement, $520,000 that I'd accumulated elsewhere. I put that into a second super fund. Mm. I was a government employee, so I'm on the old super scheme. So I get about $42,000 from the old super scheme. That's the that's a benefit or super scheme that's now been cut off.
Yeah.
And then I have the additional funds I put in, but I was thinking of next year putting another $180,000 in, but I won't be allowed under these new rules. And I think they set the bar too low. I mean, $500,000 over a lifetime, when you think of increases in healthcare costs and everything else, and also it undermines the super scheme if they keep changing the rules. Mm. People will lose faith in the whole system.
Well, you're right. I mean, it's contradictory. We've heard for years and years and years, you must save for your own retirement. You must provide for your retirement. If you're not, if you don't have $1 million in super, then you'll be living on the poverty line. I mean, this has been drummed into us for years. And so then to turn around and say, well, yep, you've got to do that, but we don't want you to put so much in. It does send those sort of mixed messages to people.
Well, absolutely. But the question I had was, if the rules, particularly over the $500,000 cap, didn't change and I was able to put in next year the extra, would you, in your view, would you do that or pay out I have an investment property with an interest-only loan, and at 5.69%. So I was thinking, if I'm not allowed to put the extra into a super, I'd look at paying that loan out. But if I was allowed to put the extra into super, would you think that better than paying out the mortgage?
Just two things there. One is, I think you mentioned you put in $520,000.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
was that last financial year?
Yeah, that was December. Yeah, I've got to wait the 3 years, so I put it in December 2014. So I'm allowed, as I understand it, in 2017, if the rules don't change, to add extra into which I was going to do, and then look at later on, just letting the interest-only loan run longer, or alternatively, I could pay that out and then not be paying about $10,000 a year in interest on that.
No, that's good. I just wanted to clarify that, because if you'd made that recent contribution of $520,000, even under the old rules, you were limited to putting in another $20,000
year. I had looked at putting that in, but we decided I'm in the state super, so I'm one of those defined benefit with most of my super, but then open up the extra account. But I left a bit of a gap just because I know they savage you in tax if you go over the 540. So we left that gap there to make sure I didn't cross that threshold. But next year, in 2017, I would have been eligible, if I'd been in a position, and I am in a position, to add extra to the second super fund I'd set up. But the government seems to be hell bent on cutting that off, and I certainly voted against the been a Liberal voter most of my life, most of the time. I'm a bit of a swinging voter, but mainly Liberal, but I certainly voted against it because of those changes, and not only for me but for for people. I mean, over the years, 500,000 will not be sufficient in additional funds for people, and they may be too late to add. They need to plan from your 30s or so to be, looking to your retirement.
And that's probably the point you make, indeed. Yeah, very good point, Paul. Look, we've got to leave it there, but thank you for your call. Summation on Paul there? Where do we go from here?
First of all, he's echoing exactly what Julie Bishop is saying.
Yes.
He's just told us that he voted on the back of these superannuation changes,
yes,
which is precisely, I think, the point that some people in the Liberal Party are making.
Sure.
So it is that that important to people. That being said, Paul probably should seek some advice, because there's a few things he's got going on there with the property and whether or not it is better to reduce that loan. Once he's retired, the tax effectiveness of a loan on an investment property really comes into question.
Mm. And even he mentioned an interest rate of 5.69%,
yeah,
which is a good, 1.5-2% above the going rate at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's
a good one. Yeah, no, absolutely. Listen, if people want to contact you, just very quickly, where do they phone you?
So office hours, give us a call. It's Sydney, so 02925875 00.
Okay, so 02587500. If maybe you don't want to give us a call and you're just listening to some of this advice that's going out, you will call that number. That's 02925875000. We're going to take a break. We've got lines available, of course, Paul called us. If you'd like to have a question, I don't know, something on the way of personal investments or superannuation, if I could say it properly, it'd be great, or anything else along the lines of money, now is the chance. The guys are here for about another 20 minutes or so. So give us a call right now on 131 873. We'll be back. It's 22 minutes to one on this Tuesday morning, and lovely to have your company. We're with Carly Tonkinson and Philip Tafe, of course, from IT Financial Services. Great people to deal with. They know their stuff. And if you would care to join us online, 131 873. Look, guys, new financial year checklist, and most strategies need time before they become really effective, and now's a great time for a fresh start, I'm told. Is that right?
Yeah, look, we thought this is worth mentioning, and a few weeks back we would have talked about, end of financial year, what do you need to do, before the end of financial year to make the most of your money? And the fact of the matter is that most things that you can do that are most effective, they need time to work. So things like salary sacrifice, you need to do that in advance for this year at least. So there's no point getting to to June and deciding that you're going to salary sacrifice your salary, $20,000 of your salary, because most of us need to have that in place for several months. So if you are looking at salary sacrificing, which is a really great way to boost your super.
Could I just jump in there?
Yeah.
For those people who don't know what salary sacrificing, can you just quickly define what you do with that?
Yeah, so if your employer pays you a set amount, instead of you receiving all of that as salary, you elect to put some of it, pre-tax, into your super fund.
Mm-hmm.
There's limits that apply, so at the moment if you're over 50, you can't go over $35,000 a year, including what your employer is putting in for you. If you're under 50, it's currently $30,000 a year, but it's a pre-tax contribution to your super. Tax of 15% comes out when you make the contribution to the fund.
Okay.
But for a lot of us, that's less than the tax that we'd pay if we received it into the bank.
Okay, that's terrific. So you're saying right now it's good to do salary sacrifice?
Because you've got to do it in advance, that's the rule.
Yeah.
If you start now, salary sacrifice a bit each month, mm-hmm, it's going to be a lot better than getting to June and trying to do a big lot in one go.
Okay.
The other things are things like spouse superannuation contributions, so where you put in a bit of money for your spouse and you get a bit of a tax refund, the co-contribution, which still exists this year, putting in a bit every month. So if you don't, the spouse contribution, for example, $3,000, if you don't have $3,000 spare in June, adding a bit in each month is a way to get all those benefits without that last-minute panic. And also that you don't have that last-minute panic, get to June and have to suddenly sort everything out.
Right.
So getting, those financial year strategies, to me, reviewing those in July is the best thing you can do, and then put it in place and you can forget about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Philip?
Yeah, the one that I see people not quite aware of is it's a spouse splitting contribution. So basically what happens, let's say you've got a husband much older than the wife, or even a few years older,
mm-hmm.
which is often the case, it means that the husband can access their super sooner. So what a husband and wife can do, the wife could split the contributions that her employer has made throughout the previous financial year across to her husband's account, and then you get access to it tax-free
right.
no. sooner than would otherwise be the case.
Yeah.
So now that we've ticked past 30 June, most super funds should be having their forms prepared so that you can make that nomination. And you basically tell the super fund everything that went in the last financial year, less whatever tax has to be paid, you know, split that across to my spouse's super account.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gives you more flexibility, you know, being able to access, taking control away from the government, I guess,
mm.
more control into your hands to be able to access it sooner when and if you wish.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. We've got Kate, who's probably got a bit of a what cheeses are off. Kate, g'day.
Yes, hi. I would just like to know why, I think Carly said earlier, well, it's only 4% who are affected by this 1.6 cap on super or on the tax concessions, as it were, as 0 instead of 15%. I'm just wondering why you would think that, because, you know, injustice only occurs to 4%, which is a significant percentage,
mm.
or even whether it's 0.1%, why would you consider that was sort of reasonable?
Okay, I'll take the credit for reading that statistic out. I was really just quoting it out of the article that we were referring to in The Australian, and that's the government, I guess, it's their promoted statistic.
That's right.
And I think my point was actually the opposite, that
it doesn't... You disagreed with that position, as it were.
Well, what I was saying was that even though it was a minority of people affected, most of us were quite prepared to kick up a stink and say, well, we're not happy with this because we don't like you tinkering with the rules and making things uncertain. And even though it may only affect a minority of people right now, we don't like that it could, you know, you could have changed the rules and affect it for me just as easily next time.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say that I only heard Carly, I only just turned the radio on, so I missed your initial comments. I would just like to say about that point that when the politicians' pension scheme changed, those that were already in it didn't change their scheme.
Mm.
So I don't understand how people can get to a position where they're no longer working and therefore don't have any flexibility at all by that stage, and having followed the rules, mm. no bottom of the harvest schemes or anything, why they should be able even to change this.
Definitely. And Kate, I mean, that is precisely the point I made. So with that $1.6 million rule, the point I made there is that they should be grandfathering that. If you've already done everything you're supposed to have done, and really what they wanted you to do and encouraged you to do, and you've done all that within the rules, then changing it at this stage is unfair. And this is what the debate is. Is it retrospective, isn't it? And my position on that is absolutely it's retrospective.
Of course it's retrospective.
So, I do, I mean, I agree with that completely. But and also with that 4%, I mean, the point we're making is it affects a lot more than 4%. So the changes that they've made are actually extremely far-reaching, and it will affect a lot of people, not just the people with more than $1.6 million in super.
One thing I'd like to clarify for people with this $1.6 million limit is what they're really saying is you can have $1.6 million that benefits from tax-free earnings. You can have more than that inside super. It just means anything above that amount will be taxed at 15% on its earnings. So it's not like they're forcing people to, you know, withdraw all their money out of super and put it into your bank account. They're not. They're just basically saying you'll have to have two accounts, one with $1.6 million tax-free. The rest, it can stay in there, still gets a concessional rate of tax of 15%. So you can view it in its simplest form. It's just a tax hike.
Mm.
But they're not actually telling you that you can't have more than that or accumulate more than that over your lifetime in super if you're lucky enough to.
And okay. Also, don't assume that there's nothing else that you can do about it. So if this measure does pass, and for those people with more than $1.6 million, that's where really you'd be speaking with your advisor or accountant and working out a strategy to best deal with that? And that's going to likely be, for a lot of people, a combination of holding funds in pension, in super, in your own name. And I even see potentially, trusts coming back into fashion as well for certain people. So for a lot of, I mean, they haven't been that useful for many years, but potentially they'll come back into play as well for some people, depending on how much you've got. So, you know, wherever these changes exist, there's always strategies to minimise the impact. And for a lot of people, particularly members of couples, there's a lot that you can do in your own name as well before paying tax. So don't assume that you will pay more tax just because you've got more than that 1.6. There are things that you can do.
Indeed. That's an interesting point about the trust, because in years gone by, people have indeed set up those trusts and were able to shunt a lot of money and a lot of assets and a whole lot of stuff into there, setting up their kids and a whole lot of that side of things as well. Yeah,
and that's where they stopped being used so much, is where they really cut down on what kids could earn.
Yes,
precisely for that reason.
Yeah.
To be able to distribute income amongst a number of different beneficiaries, for people with that higher asset base, they could certainly be quite useful. You need to be a little bit careful. Make sure they are useful. There's different costs and obviously extra admin associated with running a trust. So make sure that you're getting your money's worth from it. But I certainly see for some people that will come back into play.
Indeed. We're with Carly and Philip, of course, from IT Financial Services. If you feel the urge, you'd like to have a quick chat to them, have a question about your finances, investments, superannuation, whatever it may be, now is your chance. A call to action. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with the last five or so minutes left of the guys in the studio. So now is the time. If you'd like to call, give us a call right now. We'll be back. Nine minutes to one, and you are with Mike Williams, and of course every Tuesday morning we have IT Financial Services. This morning Carly Tonkinson and Philip Tafer are with us, and Peter from Parramatta is on. Guys, Peter, g'day.
Oh, g'day, Mike.
How you going?
Pretty good, and Carly and Philip.
Indeed, that's right. They're listening now. What's your question?
Look, it's to do with superannuation. My wife and I, both of us, run a small business, right? We intend to put some money into mine as a concessional deduction.
Yeah.
But with my wife, I wanted to know about this co-contribution bit.
I can tell you the way it works is depending on your income, if you make a personal contribution of up to $1,000 to your fund, if your income's below a certain level, the government will match it with $500. So,
okay, well what's a certain level, Philip?
It is currently $35,454. If your assessable income is less than that, you're entitled to the full $500 co-contribution.
Worth noting, Peter, they'll add on any salary sacrificed or concessional contribution amounts that you're making. So if you're earning an income and then putting some of that gross income into super to reduce your taxable income, they'll add that voluntary super contribution back on when looking at those income limits. So that $35,000 that Philip just mentioned would include any voluntary super contributions.
Right, so...
just to clarify from there, scales down from there. So once you earn above $50,454, you get nothing. Mm. But, at that level, you put in a dollar and government will give you 50 cents.
Okay, so $1,000 has got to be non-concessional, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, or at the same time, could you then put an amount in the as a concessional?
Of course.
As well?
Yeah, if it makes sense from a tax perspective, yeah. So you're just working within the limits. So the concessional cap, depending on your age, is either 30 or 35,000 at the moment. And then you're non-concessional, assuming that the budget changes go through, you've got your $500,000 lifetime cap that's your limit.
Okay, so just for argument's sake, I could put $10,000 in for her as a concessional, and say $1,000 as a non-concessional, and then the government would match that $1,000 by $500.
Yep, assuming her assessable income is less
than income is below 35.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Well, look, thanks very much. You know, I must say, I really enjoy your findings program.
Great.
Thanks very much, Peter.
Well done, Peter, and have a terrific rest of the night. Stay with us. There's a whole lot more coming everyone's way, of course. 131-873 is the number, 131-873. Just very quickly, as we've got maybe just a couple of minutes, the golden rules of investing. Markets will always go up and down, but by following some basic rules, you can reduce much of the risk. What do you reckon, guys?
Yeah, look, just quickly, I would say to people, don't panic. We saw
you just stole
Brexit,
my number one point.
We saw the Brexit, you know, what happened to markets, the Australian market, particularly, you know, our market was live while the votes were coming through, so we particularly suffered on that. Yeah. And we saw markets overseas get absolutely hammered, really. If you had sold out on those days, you know, even a week later, you'd be pretty sorry. So don't panic. If your investment is supposed to be a long-term investment, make it a long-term investment. There's always going to be your Brexit come along. There's always going to be something like that. And then the other thing which people should look at doing, if you're putting new money into the market, think about putting it in gradually over several months, depending on how much you're looking at. What that does is average the times that you go into the market. So rather than putting it in all on one day and then having something like Brexit come along and immediately change the outcome for you.
Sure.
If you're putting that money in gradually, look, long term, it probably won't make that much of a difference, but it makes it a lot more comfortable going in, a much easier ride to get into the market.
Interesting. Philip?
Another rule is go against the herd. You know, everybody calls our office. Share market's gone up for a few days. People call and say, oh, look, everything's going well. Should I get in? I wish they called me in the reverse situation.
My.
You know, market's been going down for a few days. Everything's looking a bit average. Mm. That's when you should be calling your advisor and saying, maybe we should buy something because everything's cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, don't get sucked into this, you know, read the newspaper and see everything's returns are fantastic, so I think I'll get in. That generally just means you're overpaying.
Is it, just a quick general question, you talk about markets, you talk about stocks or investments there. Housing is still okay, though, isn't it? I mean, I know the boom's sort of gone a bit, but investing in houses, still cool. Yeah,
look, housing is still pretty solid, and it depends who you listen to as to
and the right areas to buy in, too. That's the other thing.
And that's the problem, I guess, for a lot of people with housing is the fact that you can only afford one house, and so you're taking a big bet on one single area.
Yes.
But there's also other ways to invest in property. You can invest in a property fund, which will have a lot of property. You can invest in commercial property. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of ways to get property exposure, not just investments. And the other thing, of course, with property as things stand is there can be quite often some attractive tax benefits for people with investing in property. Keep in mind, though, you know, just like super, those tax benefits can change as well. So make sure it stands up as an investment.
Indeed. Great having you in the studio. And by the way, that number, folks, is 02-9258-7500. That's 9258-7500. They're great people. This is just an example of Carly and Philip in the studio for the last hour of the style and type of people that you'll find at IT Financial Services. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you, mate.
Have a lovely night. It's been lovely to meet you. Good on you. 131-873 is the number. In the meantime, we're going to cross to our news for our newsroom for the latest updates, and stay with us. We've got a whole lot more coming your way.